Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interviews. Today we have a fabulous guest who's 14 hours in my future. I can't wait to find out. I bet I'll still be in quarantine. How exciting for me. Ross Perkins film Madhouse, which is kind of still how I'm living, and he probably does too, since we're both on quarantine together. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, how are you doing on your quarantine? Going nuts?
It's only just getting serious here. So, yeah, you can't have more than two people around at once. That's pretty serious.
Well, they've extended ours for another 4 weeks, so it'll be 6 weeks of this. I can't wait. So, oh well. See, look at that. Getting weird Skype calls. Must be my kids. So, when you started setting this up, like the iPhone, I've never seen this in a film. Where did that come from?
The introduction?
Yes.
That was one of the first things that came to mind when I had the idea, kind of set up the idea that the phone is telling the story. So, you know, you are the phone and everything's happening in front of you. And then I thought it'd be a cool economical way to tell you who the character is, where they are, what they do, and show you all that in the first 30 seconds.
Ah, it seems good, minute.
Yeah. Just to, I think, for economical reasons. And, to do something different. Like, I wanted to show from the first frame that, you know, this is a little out of the box. This is different.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Like, did you actually take an iPhone and set it up, or did you steal it off YouTube, or how was this done?
That was me with my laptop, and tried to just create the interface, and that took a long time to create the interface because if it was too realistic, your eyes didn't know where to look. So to make it just really basic, black and white. And then it kind of developed over time, but it took me a year and a half to edit the whole film though.
Ouch.
Yeah. And I did all the editing because I couldn't possibly explain to anyone, you know, what was in my head, really. So I really had to do it myself. I didn't have a choice.
I could actually agree with you on this one.
Yeah.
I definitely think the edits here are very poignant, and you do have to know exactly what you want as a director on this one.
Yeah, that's right. And I wouldn't wish it upon anyone to, you know, do it to get somebody else to do it. If you can do it yourself, do it yourself.
I guess so. I mean, some people like myself go nuts editing, but that's just me. How in the film, did you film with the iPhone? Because it looks like you're actually using iPhone footage, or are you tricking me?
Oh, no. I shot it with the iPhone 6S, which I still have. I didn't want to have any reeks. Like, I mean, also I didn't have the money. I wanted to just... The technology was pretty good then, to be able to convincingly shoot a film in 4K. And I just wanted to have that 360 sort of experience. So there was never any danger of capturing, you know, a boom mic or a lighting rig. The iPhone I found, again, really economical as well. And just the one camera, the one iPhone.
So you didn't shoot with anything else other than an iPhone?
No, all iPhone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, every frame.
Even the stuff inside the house, that's all an iPhone?
Yeah, it's all iPhone, yeah.
I'm quite impressed, Dan. I did not see that at all. I didn't notice it in any way.
Yeah, terrific. Yeah, I mean, I think the technology is good enough that, you know, the untrained eye can't really tell. I mean, the whole thing's a one wide-angle lens. But other than that, there isn't too many giveaways. And then it is, like, consciously in the reflections of shots. So, you know, there are moments where, you know, I'm holding the camera into a mirror or one of the other actors are, and you can see it playing out. And I thought that was an exciting idea to have the film play out almost in real time.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is for the viewer that we're looking at a phone all the time. You're constantly going back to the phone. When they're trying to break into his bank account and they're sending texts and it's always on the phone. So maybe if I thought it was an iPhone, I never had time because I'm always back looking at a phone screen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So there's really, I guess, no time for the viewers. That was your plan to ever think about it, I guess.
Yeah, I think the real driving force was to stay true to the idea of that you are the phone. So you are experiencing everything just from the phone. So and then it was done in a realistic way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of my questions is, can a girl really party, play, party?
Can a girl party, play, party?
That's a line from your movie, yes.
I believe so.
I just picked up on that. That was pretty funny. I'm like, I got to write that down. The drinking photos from a bar, is that just where you guys went to hang out one night and just shot them that way? Or did you have distinct shots you were looking for?
Oh, we got permission to shoot in the bar. The people there were fantastic and let us have the music down. And what they're drinking, that's real alcohol. So they are really going for it. And yeah, we had a great night. It was fantastic.
You do have a shot in the subway.
Yes.
I'm sure you don't have a permit for that, but we can call it guerrilla shooting. Did that happen?
No permit. So that was just the station closest to where I lived at the time. And, yeah, I mean, with the iPhone, you can, I know this is irresponsible, but, you know, you can get away with it. It's just you and your friends hanging out with your iPhone. And then when you're dressed as junkies, people really do leave you alone.
Very true.
Nobody would dare ask us what we're filming.
Now, did that happen at all? Did people give you weird looks by the way your cast was dressed? Because they do look like thugs.
So the house that we filmed in is actually my parents' house. So my parents went away for 3 months, and I clocked that idea. So when they're away, I trashed the house and filmed Madhouse in it. We had a neighbor, and the neighbor came to, I think he went to return or pick up a lawnmower from the back shed, and I was dressed in the full junkie garb, and yeah, he was pretty horrified. He also thought that I might have, my life might have taken a turn for the worse. Might have fallen on hard times.
How did your parents feel about them using your house, or did you tell them?
I told them. I go, I'd like to film like a small scene with my friends in the shed. And that was an absolute lie. What I ended up doing was taking pictures, incidentally, with the iPhone of every item in the house. So where every book was, where every DVD was on the shelf, took a photograph of it. And then when I moved everything out, we kind of gutted it. So we kind of put everything into a room that's not in the film.
Uh-huh.
And then I had a set designer, Kimberly Hart, who's fantastic, and she created this family house, moved everything around. And then when so they were away for – we shot for 3 weeks, and I could have shot for longer, but I wanted to have 1 week of putting everything back. So I needed that week to put everything right back. My folks had no idea. We told them eventually, and they're very happy and very proud. However, they can never see the film.
I was wondering that was my next question.
My brother saw it. He came to a screening, and afterwards he said that he enjoyed it, but he saw things he wished he'd never seen.
I could see that. Do your parents not have Amazon Prime then?
No, my parents have only just been connected to the internet, pretty much.
Oh, so you're good. You're good.
Yeah, they're way off the streaming services. Yeah.
You narrate through text a lot in this film. Did you find that easier than telling the story? Because, I mean, a lot of it's the affair is narrated through text. Banking information is narrated through text.
That is true. Yeah, so text does play a big part in it. And I did write, structure it. What bits? So there was a balance. I didn't want it to be all video, and I didn't want it to be all photos, or all texts or phone calls. So I did kind of break it down where and when I wanted these elements. But I think I saw it as another storytelling device. So it's just another way to tell the story was through text.
Yeah, it was kind of neat. I mean, when you were dressing up, I guess these people were your friends, or did you hire them?
Well, I worked as an actor for 5 years straight. And over that period, I met some really, really cool actors and became friends. Like, and so my favorite people, the ones that I like the most, they're the ones that I cast in Madhouse.
And it does live up to its name. I want people to know that. It does lift up. I have a note. What is a lugu? A lugi? A lugo?
Well, a logie, yeah.
A logie.
A logie is the Australian Golden Globes.
Ah, okay.
Mm, yeah. So we have a film and television awards. It's called a logie. It's a horrible name.
Yeah, I would say so. I thought it was something weird. I'm like, what is this?
It sounds like a symptom of coronavirus.
Absolutely it does. So when you were doing the set designing, did you use your parents' furniture then? Because your brother obviously would say yes.
Yeah, so the furniture is just rearranged. But I think for the better. It actually looks quite nice until it gets all trashed. we didn't move. I don't think we really moved anything in, but it was just a matter of designing it, redesigning it.
Now, I'm not going to ruin the ending, but I'm going to ask a question of the ending. Was the ending that you had in store always the ending you shot?
Yeah, and it was very difficult to put together. And, in that year and a half of editing, I would show people who weren't directly involved with the film, I'd give them like a screening.
Yes.
And, the ending was very difficult to get the right balance of, the character's downfall, Wes, and then also, the next level of, Stockholm Syndrome with Gabby.
Right.
So that balance was really hard. And then the last time I saw the film, I walked away happy with it. But it was always there. And I also got really great advice early on when I was writing it. They said, do a conventional home invasion movie for the first and second act. Like, tell the movie that everyone expects to see. And then in the third act, just go somewhere completely different than no one expects. And I'd like to think that that's there.
Oh, absolutely it's there, because I was like, where's this going? Like, I really had no idea.
Good. And I hope I hope that's for the better.
Yeah, it's just one of those crazy films that I think it needs a second viewing, even by me, just to go, okay, now I get where it's going. I need to see what I've missed.
Yeah, I think if you know where it's going, you're a bit more at ease. And then if you watch it for the first time, it's, kind of, you're trying to keep up, maybe. The good news is it's everything that I wanted and more. So I know I'm happy with it. And it is a story that I wanted to tell. And I told it the way I wanted to tell it. So I'm really at peace with it.
Do you find a lot of people have reaction to the film? Like, just go, oh, my God, that could really happen to them?
There's something really unnerving about somebody breaking into your space. I'm in a nice apartment in the city here where I'm speaking to you, and somebody tried to get into this apartment, and I was like, man, that's some horrible poetic justice. Like, I was terrified for at least a week. Like, just the idea that somebody tries to invade your space, I find that inherently frightening, and I think most people do.
I would say so. So where do you think your concept came from that? I thought maybe it was a home invasion concept that happened to you personally, but obviously not. So where did it come from?
I was at my parents' place one night, and I saw – I was alone. I think they were away or something. And I was upstairs, and I remember through the window seeing a bunch of two guys and a girl – that looked a bit rough, just hanging out the front of the house. And I was eyeing them, waiting for them to come in. They never did. They just, were probably waiting for a cab or something. But I think that's kind of where the idea started, the inception for it. And then I really thought about it, and I thought, I could probably actually do that, just grab it, tell it through the point of view of an iPhone and have it filmed in the house. And then there was that got me doing some research and I found that there was I looked up worst home invasions into Google, and there's a story that came out of Connecticut in America that was just brutal. I didn't want to tell that story, like, specifically, because this is something a bit cold about that. What's the word? Insensitive. I thought I'd just reframe it, set in Australia, but take sort of the blueprint of it. And then the motive for that horrible home invasion in Connecticut, it was junkies who wanted money. And I thought, you know, do it in a different way, make it a bit more irreverent as opposed to a flat-out horror. Because to me, the scenario was the scary thing. I didn't want to do jump scares or anything like that. That's not really what I'm interested in. So I wanted to do more of a character drama and disguise it as a darker story.
It's very dark. I've got to give that to you. It's very dark. Being a first-time filmmaker, what was the most difficult thing for you?
The sound. The sound certainly was the most difficult for me. I had to do a real crash course, and I had a wonderful friend who taught sound at a well-known film school. So I had a crash meeting with her, and she was fantastic, and she, you know, hit me up with all these tips. So I recorded the sound three times over. And then as for acting in it, that was just a little bit more difficult because you'd have to set up the sound, you'd have to set up the lighting, you'd have to set up the blocking, and then the camera, and then jump in. So I think wearing all those hats was difficult. However, very, very fun. Like, I really did have the time of my life. It was fantastic. As dark as the story is, everyone had a great time.
So you got all this stuff to do. How do you feed your crew at the same time? If you're directing, you're acting, you're doing the sound, do you just order pizza?
My parents' pantry. there was food in the house, and I had crews. I had a first and a second AD.
Okay.
Who were both fantastic, and they have small roles in the film. They would get pizza and food and, yeah, make sure everyone was fed. But when you're wearing all those hats, you got to delegate that one. So that's an important thing to delegate. And everyone got fed and everyone was happy. And a lot of boozy nights afterwards. People wouldn't want to leave. Like, we would hang around for hours. So we all had a great time.
Fair enough. How do people react to your screening? I mean, the film being very dark, which you both agree to, do people, like, react weird when they come and talk to you at a Q&A?
The best example I can give you, you're a film buff, right?
I am.
Yeah, as I am. And I had a family and friend screening under the Harbour Bridge, actually. And all my family and friends were there, except my parents, because they can't. And everyone had heard about the film for like 2 years by that stage. And they were all really excited, and we had, you know, popcorn and beer and pizza, and we're watching this film. And I felt that everyone was getting ready to watch Aliens. They're really getting pumped. But instead, I put on Alien 3.
And they're like, no,
and they kind of felt a bit more of a stomach punch than they thought, I think.
Did anybody recognize your parents' house besides your brother?
No. No one really picks up on it. I mean, that's another challenge, actually, doing all this in the house where you kind of took your first steps. It's all make-believe.
Yeah.
But there is something a bit strange about, you know, without giving away, pulling out somebody's nails at the family dinner table, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real – there's something very strange about that.
Well, there's also a very strange scene with a hammer.
Yeah.
Which I'm not really going to go into. I'll leave that up for the viewer. That's a very interesting scene, too.
Convincing for you?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Good. Well, no one got hurt, which is good.
Well, I didn't think anybody got hurt. It was a film. At least I hope not.
I think at that stage in the film, things are moving up to that next level.
So I guess my other thing, when the neighbors are seeing you film this film, do they even come over and knock on the door and know what's up? Or they just never came over?
Well, you know the party scene?
Yes, in the background.
So we're getting ready to do that. And prior to that, we'd had actors dressed as police officers and screaming and crying and people running down the street yelling for help. And no one ever came. I have a neighbor who, and my producer Kim, she was saying, you know, you've got to tell your neighbor that you're having this giant party with, you know, 30, 35 extras. And I was a bit reluctant because she's the neighbor who I grew up with, you know, so I did feel a bit, I don't know, strange asking her or telling her. So her name is Mrs. Jean Neville. She's in the credits. Yeah. So I went over, knocked on the door, and she brought me in, and I said, oh, look, we're doing some filming. And she goes, yeah, I know you've been doing filming. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going to get blasted by this sweet, lovely neighbor. And instead she goes, look, I just want to tell you, if there's anything you need, like if you need like food, drink, just bring it over. I'd love to look after everyone. I was like, look, can I give you a hug? Because that is the most beautiful thing. So, yeah, she's fantastic. She didn't care. She did not mind. And, it was fantastic. And that night particularly was fantastic. Had a great night.
Well, there you go. I don't really have any more questions for you. I apologize because I'll ruin things if I get into it anymore.
No, it's all right. I mean, also, I hope I'm not burning through all your material.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great. Well, I do have three fun questions for you before I let you go.
Yeah, sure.
Because your first time on the show, what's your favorite film?
I would say Assassination of Jesse James.
Off topic, we could have a big fight about this one. But we won't now.
I got one. I can top that. Dog Day Afternoon.
Which is the funniest thing is, it's on my DVR and I've watched half of it and I've been home for a week.
Dog Day or Jesse James?
I've seen all of Jesse James. Half of Dog Day I've watched.
Oh, Dog Day's the best.
I do like Dog Day. I'll probably finish it tomorrow, so we'll see.
I'll put those two because I can't pick one thing.
Fair enough. One film you should have seen and haven't.
I haven't seen Hugo. I can't, you know, the Scorsese one.
It's cute.
I can't get into Hugo. I've tried, and I'll keep trying.
I could see you not getting it. I'm okay with you saying Hugo. I mean, you never couldn't get into it. I'm good with that. I love Hugo, but I could see it not for everybody. I have no issues with that at all.
I need to revisit. I think you've got to be in a particular mood, and I don't know what mood you got to be in, but Scorsese's the bomb.
I agree. Now, your last question, who are you going to thank in your Oscar speech?
My mom and my dad would be the ones. Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
My parents.
Are you writing a second film before you go?
Yes.
Excellent. And started filming?
No. So this is – quarantine is giving me a wonderful way to do a lot of pre-production, which I'll need. And I'll do more traditional film as well, so no iPhone.
Okay. Tell me where they can find your film. I know it's on Amazon Prime. Anywhere else?
Vimeo on demand and YouTube on demand as well.
Well, thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
No, thank you very much. All the best.
Okay, bye-bye.